The project that I'm working on at the moment is looking to use a novel type of gene therapy to try and counteract one of the mechanisms the tumours can use to induce seizures.
Fellow Homo sapiens, welcome back to Epilepsy Sparks Insights. Now, March is Brain Tumour Awareness Month, and around one third of people with a brain tumour or who have had a brain tumour will develop an epilepsy as a result. So this is perfect timing for us, lucky lot, to meet a rising star scientist and brain tumour related epilepsy researcher, Kate Connor. Please don't forget to like, comment and subscribe, because your comment and your like will help spread awareness and understanding of the epilepsies around the world. And also, if you just learned one thing from today, let it be that not everybody with an epilepsy is born with that epilepsy. You, your friend, your family member, your patients, anybody could develop an epilepsy at any point in their lives. Now, on to our aforementioned star of the week, Kate Connor.
I am currently a research fellow in Trinity College Dublin, and I started my science journey with a chemistry degree. And I studied chemistry because I've always loved sort of like, here's a problem and I want to fix it. And I always thought chemistry was kind of like an interesting way to you know, pursue that. But then I ended up getting into cancer research through my PhD, which I did in University College Dublin. And I focused on breast cancer. And while I did enjoy it, and obviously I love science and I stuck around, I didn't find a huge passion in that field of research. And then I went to a conference over in Germany and got really lucky and met this really interesting scientist who ran a group who studied glioblastoma and did neuro-oncology research, and very cheekily asked if I could have a job. So I got offered a postdoc in the Royal College of Surgeons working on a project that was trying to design a novel way to treat brain tumours, a novel way to deliver drugs to brain tumours. And then That's where my interest got sparked, and I've been working on brain tumours for the last 8 years. And then most recently, I met Mark Cunningham through a project where we were working in collaboration, and I got into the world of brain tumor related epilepsy and, yeah, I found my new passion. So trying to be a cancer neuroscientist now.
I've been thinking about this for a very long time. Can you talk about, or just give us a brief insight into the variations in types of brain tumors and how they can cause epilepsy, please? Because I think lots of us just think, oh, it's a lump of skank in your brain and that's it. But it's not that simple, right?
No, so I think when you say brain tumor, like, you're referring to this huge umbrella of types of tumor. So not only does it change depending on what cell it arises from, so you have some that are from the astrocytomas, are from the astrocytes, then you've got oligodendrogliomas and they're from the oligodendrocytes. So there's tons of different types of tumors, but also they have different mutational profiles, they have different growth rates, they respond differently to therapy. So the most aggressive one that everyone tends to hear about is glioblastoma. So this is a grade 4 astrocytoma. It's very invasive. It's very hard to treat and has very poor survival rates. And then you have lower grade tumors, so lower grade gliomas, which tend to grow a lot slower and be a little bit less invasive. And actually the incidence of epilepsy or seizures is, as we say, inversely correlated to malignancy. So it tends to be, if you have a lower grade tumor, you have more likelihood of developing seizures.
Why is that, do you know?
So it's actually really interesting. So there's a couple of reasons. And so I think the stats are, you have about 40% of high grade gliomas have seizures as a first presenting symptom. But in the lower grade, it can be anywhere from 60 to 90%. And so Some of the theory is that it's the physical tumor, the pressure the tumor is putting on the brain. So it's very mechanical. But then one of the major factors is what's called an IDH mutation. So in the lower grade tumors, you tend to have a more frequently have this mutation in IDH, where it's really uncommon in the higher grade tumors. And actually, if you have an IDH mutation in glioblastoma, they don't even consider it a glioblastoma, because your survival rate is, like, if you have an IDH mutation, your survival rate's about 12 to 15 years compared to 12, 15 months. It can be significantly different. So it's a different disease. And one of the theories is that when you have this mutation, so more frequently in the lower grade, you have a different metabolism within your tumor, and you produce a chemical called 2-HG as part of this different metabolic process. And that 2-HG chemically is very similar to the neurotransmitter glutamate. And we know that glutamate causes excitability in neurons. So the idea is that the tumors are producing this compound or this molecule as a side effect of its altered mutation and altered metabolism, which is then acting like glutamate and causing this sort of excitability in the cells. So it's really very interesting. That's just one of the many reasons. There's also a theory that maybe the slower growing tumors have more time to cause the destructive processes that result in epilepsy. So if you have a really fast growing tumor, maybe you just haven't had the tumor long enough for epilepsy to develop.
So it's almost like the longer the tumor hangs around, the more slowly it grows. It's almost the better it gets at actually kind of affecting the rest of your brain. It's almost like a, is this a bad word to use, but a higher quality tumor, because it can do each and everything it wants to, right? It's bad.
Yeah, it's almost a bit more insidious. It's like slow and, you know, subtly growing, but then it's having this impact around it that it's only has the time to do so because it's sort of slow and subtly growing. So
I know somebody whose family member had a brain tumor, and the family member continued to have seizures after the tumor had been removed. Why does this happen? Why does a person, rather than solely having seizures, actually officially then develop epilepsy despite the tumor not being there? Why does that happen?
It's a really good question, because this is exactly what proves that it's not just mechanical pressure causing the seizures. Because when you remove a high-grade tumor, you're never removing all of it. So these invasive tumors, before you even go in to resect them, have invaded like diffusely into the surrounding brain. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, historically, in the 40s, there was a surgeon who did a hemispherectomy on a patient who had a high-grade tumor. And so they removed one whole hemisphere, which contained the tumor, and it grew back in the other hemisphere, which just showed that those cells have infiltrated really distantly, sometimes before you even go in for surgery, in like a glioblastoma, for example. And so the tumor is so, I don't want to give it credit, but tumors are smart, you know, and they have, you know, a lot of mechanisms that they do to kind of almost convince your body to ignore it, but also to change its environment to suit it to grow.
It sounds like a proper evolution, like arising from this tumor. It's like, I'm going to sort out my environment so that I can grow.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So tumors are able to, for example, change the vascularization around them. So tumors are really hypoxic, which means because they have really high oxygen demands. So they can cause angiogenesis, which causes the growth of new vasculature, which brings them all the nutrients and glucose they need to grow. So, and this is, you know, basically the fact that they can subvert the environment so smartly means that the cells that remain, even when you've resected, are still producing all the factors that are capable of producing an epilepsy. So tumor cells produce loads of what we call cytokines, and these are like mediators or molecules involved in inflammation. And loads of them are pro-inflammatory. There's loads of other factors which kind of call immune systems too close to the environment. And all of these factors together can essentially, the tumor can just continue to happily live in its environment when the bulk of it's gone. You know, there's still tumor cells there doing what they want to do in the surrounding brain tissue.
And when a person has a resection of this tissue, why can't all of the tumor be removed?
It obviously also depends on where in the brain it is. So, but with any invasive tumor, there's no way you can go in and remove single cells that have invaded into that peritumoral area, so the area around the tumor. And there are mechanisms or like techniques that the surgeons will use to try improve their extent of resection. So they have what's called 5-ALA, which is a dye they can give to the patient beforehand. And then during surgery, they can apply a UV light, and they'll see where the tumor cells are. Or there's other dyes, like there's one called fluorescein, which they use. But even still, you can't go in and remove cell by cell those invasive cells. And unfortunately, without removing normal brain tissue and potentially causing a deficit for the patient, it's very difficult to remove 100%. And then those remaining cells, there's also the question of, are you selecting and like leaving behind the most aggressive cells? Because they're the invasive ones. And if those, you know, if those are the only ones you're leaving behind, you've selected for a more aggressive tumour afterwards.
A quick mention, if you would like to check out a hilarious fellow epilepsy podcaster who happens to have brain tumours and epilepsy and a really cute service dog named George, then after you have listened to this episode, obviously, check out the inspirational Landis Wiedner from the What the F, that's a capital E and a capital F before you ask, podcast. You can find the link in the description. Well, going on from that then, tell us a little bit about your research and what you and foresee the future to potentially look like for people with brain tumour related epilepsy.
Yeah, I think something which, and I was guilty of this as well before I kind of joined Professor Mark Cunningham's group, was that I never really thought about anything except for the tumour cells. I never thought about the fact that these tumour cells are interacting with your neurons and they're communicating with the neurons around them to basically drive their own malignancy, but also induce these terrible side effects and comorbidities, including epilepsy. And so what I see in the future is that more cancer biologists will move into understanding that the tumour doesn't exist in isolation, and that we need to really consider the impact on, first of all, the tumour growth, but also the quality of life of the patients that have this comorbidity. And what you see as a seizure is only one tiny drop in the ocean of the impact that this has on a patient's life who also has a brain tumour. So the project that I'm working on at the moment is looking to use a novel type of gene therapy to try and counteract one of the mechanisms the tumours can use to induce seizures. So we have this these viral vectors. So you can induce, or you can like engineer a cell using a lentivirus where it can insert a piece of DNA into a targeted cell, and then you can produce a certain protein using that technique. And what we have is, we're very interested in how tumours can use glutamate, which is a neurotransmitter, to kind of subvert the environment that it's in and cause an excitability in the neurons nearby, which then results in epilepsy or in a seizure, and then can result in epilepsy. And we have this gene therapy whereby we hope we can overexpress a certain protein and engineer the neurons to essentially, when they sense glutamate in the environment, to not become overexcited. And so it kind of is like an off switch, or like a trip, like, you know, those kind of trip wires you have, or a fuse. It's like a fuse, kind of, that the hope we can like insert this into the nearby neurons and stop them from becoming overexcited when the tumor produces glutamate.
And at what stage are you in this research?
We have some really very talented collaborators who have developed these viral vectors and have shown they work in another like setting, not in the brain tumor setting. And what we have done is we've established an animal model where we can grow brain tumours, what we call orthotopically, so which means we put the brain tumour into the brain. So in the past, a lot of animal work would have been done where they put the tumour into the flank under the skin, which is fine to grow a tumour, but it doesn't give you any of the interactions the tumour has with the cells around it.
Right.
So we grow these tumours in the brain of the animal, and we also can implant these wireless telemetry devices. So we do like EEG on the animals. And so far what we've done is we've established how we can grow the tumours and monitor the animals for their seizures using these EEG telemetry devices and video monitoring. And then in the next 2 months, we're going to start with the treatment, and hopefully we can see an impact on the seizure development. So,
wow, how exciting. Well, you must keep us in the loop and let us know where you are with that.
Thank you very much for having me.
A huge thanks to Kate for sharing with us information about brain tumours, brain tumour-related epilepsy, and indeed her exciting research. And I don't know about you, but I cannot wait to read her paper on this study when it is released. Again, if you haven't already, please don't forget to like, comment and subscribe, and see you next time.